This is Jeremy from the Idle Red Hands. We're going to bring you something a little bit different this time. We did an interview with Jules, the honorary historian of the Kansai Jig Gaming Group here in Japan, and then also Ryan, who is part of Ryan and Linda, the people responsible for creating Jig Kansai as we know now. This interview takes place on the 10th anniversary of the Golden Week Gaming Convention, and I'd like to apologize in advance for the audio. We wanted to kind of give you the feel of the activity of the gaming convention, but there is a lot of background noise, so apologies in advance if it's hard to hear. And now our interview.
Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
First, we talked to Jules, the honorary historian of Kansai Jig, and kind of the inspiration for us doing this interview, and also for Ryan and Linda to travel from New Zealand to come back to attend the 10th anniversary convention.
So we're here with Jules, who's the unofficial Jig historian.
Right.
And it was your blog or your post on the Facebook group that led to Ryan and Linda thinking that they wanted to document the 10th anniversary of Jig.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. This amazing history that sort of Jig has, and the bit in the middle, people don't usually look at the bit in the middle as the important part, was at least to me and my experiences the important part. And I didn't want that middle part to be forgotten, which might even be in some ways the most important part, which was the reincarnation of Jig by Ryan and Linda here in Osaka, which is when Jig, as created by the original guy back in the day, had gone dormant. Nobody was doing anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ryan and Linda started their own sort of club, they saw that there was this dormant Yahoo group, which is what people used back in the day, and they could see that it had this history, so they contacted the person that was in charge of that and said, hey, how about we take over this instead of just creating their own one from scratch?
Yep.
And they were like, yeah, sure. And then that sort of simple small thing sort of brought Jig back, brought it back to life, and the hard work that Ryan and Linda did, and they really, really, really did a lot of hard work and were incredibly kind and gracious to all the people who wanted to play board games in Osaka at that time, really sort of made it grow bigger, 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 and then it went back to Tokyo, where it started originally. And then I suspected, although it's a bit of an assumption, but I strongly suspected that probably they didn't even know about the middle part. They probably just thought this is a club that was started in Tokyo, and now it's in Tokyo, and that's what it's always been, you know? But actually, there's the very, very important middle part, without which there wouldn't be any Jig at all. It would all just be a distant, distant memory. And I wanted that to sort of, people to know, of it to be recorded somewhere. And that's what got me to write it.
Yeah. Well, after it was revived, what was some interesting stories that came about, or what were some surprises?
Well, it was very small. Mm-hmm. I don't know about surprises, but it was very sort of small and intricate. And what really sort of made the whole thing work was the niceness of Ryan and Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And they cooked for everybody and charged almost nothing for it, barely played any board games themselves, just to host it. And the whole thing came out of Moriguchi-shi, their house. They had a multi-story house where they would run games. And just it was just sort of a very pleasant, sort of warm, friendly family, I guess. And we just, it sort of blossomed into this sort of conventions and big organized events that we have now and what everybody associates with Jig. But for the longest time, it was just people getting together in their little small groups in their homes. More than anything, playing Battlestar Galactica. That was the game synonymous with that period of time. Just Battlestar Galactica, more Battlestar Galactica, more Battlestar Galactica.
And you'll be playing Battlestar Galactica right after this.
Just a moment.
Yes. That was big at the time, Had you known Linda and Ryan prior to Jig, or did you meet them through Jig?
I met them, how I met them is lost to the mists of time, and all us sort of old-time members of Jig so long ago that none of us quite remember how we met everybody or how it all linked. It's almost like some sort of magical coincidence brought us all together, and the same magic sort of removed the history and memories from our minds, because we don't quite remember how we all sort of got together. But the one thing that was sort of ran through all of it was the hard work of Ryan and Linda, and it will have undoubtedly been that in some way, you know, like they went out there and met people and put flyers up, and they, it was their hard manual labour that really sort of allowed any of it to happen.
Putting flyers up, pre-social media days.
Right. Yes, yeah. And if there's a fantastic anecdote, which is on the official D&D podcast from about a year ago, which is also one of the things that got me to write the article, is that he was talking about starting a little board game role-playing game club in Japan, and I was listening to it in the bath, and I nearly sort of choked as I heard it, as I thought, oh, that's clearly him creating the original incarnation of Jake, you know. I couldn't believe it. I was listening to on the podcast, and he tells this story of back in the day, he said he advertised in the English language newspaper, so I guess there must have been one in Japan, in whatever it was, I don't know.
What, Japan Times or...
Probably. Yeah. It's like I advertised in the English language newspaper. Gamers wanted... No, not gamers. Role players. Role players wanted...
Considering the kind of classifieds that are in there, you would get some interesting people turning
up. Well, that's just it.
Oh, really?
That's just it. He said role players wanted telephone number, name, and he would get... Whoa. People calling him, and they would say, oh, I like role playing too, great, we need to get together. You know, a person on the phone would ask him, well, what are you into? And he'd say, well, I quite like this version of D&D, I also quite like Traveller. And most people would be like, yeah, I like Traveller as well, you know, I've played it a bunch. But every once in a while, he said, occasionally they'd ask, well, what are you into? And he'd say, like, D&D Traveller, and they'd be like, oh. Okay then, I'll just go goodbye. And just exactly as you mentioned, yes. Which is an amazing anecdote that you can hear said and performed far, far better than I just did in the official D&D podcast of about a year ago, I think. Which I couldn't have been any more stunned than when I came on the D&D podcast that I was listening to.
Thanks so much.
Well, we end on sex. It was hard to top that one, so.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, so thank you so much.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Now on to the main event. We talked to Ryan about the origins of Jig, what it is, and how he developed it, how they nurtured it, and how it grew, and why it's lasted so long.
Welcome to the Idle Red Hands. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Lyle.
Today, I'll introduce myself. I'm Ryan.
All right. Our special guest today, Ryan. We're here today in a convention, so bear with us. It might be a little noisy. And that convention is Jig, right?
The Jig Golden Week Convention. So people who don't know about Japanese holidays, Golden Week happens to be, a week where about three national holidays fall together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Golden Week. There's a Silver Week in September.
Right. There is as well.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Silver Week because that's kind of part of the origin of everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, nice. Of the convention anyway. So I'll explain about Silver Week later.
Nice. All right. So I guess the biggest question is, what is JIG?
It stands for the Japan International Gaming or Gamers Guild. Mm-hmm. And it's a group that's existed for quite a long time. On the internet, it started out as a Yahoo group by some guys in the Tokyo area. And they created groups for other regions in Japan, most of which fell into disuse. My own sort of thing was I was here. I came to Japan in 2002. Mm-hmm. I was working in a big company called Nova for the first 5 years, and then Nova basically collapsed. While I was at Nova, I was doing a little bit of role-playing with some co-workers.
Right.
But once the company went bankrupt, and my wife and I decided to stay on, we had other work that we could go to.
Yeah.
But that kind of destroyed the role-playing thing because everybody was stressed out. Some of the guys left. Other people were like, well, we've got to find jobs. And so we were just kind of like not getting our gaming itch scratched. But suddenly we had a lot of free time on our hands. And that got me searching on the internet, and I found Jig. I found this Yahoo group, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll post on there, see if I can find somebody. So I tapped away, sent a group message out on this thing. It seemed to have a membership group, and I got no response. Nothing. Oh, okay. Oh, well, I'll try again. And I tried again, and I tried again, and it actually took a few months of persistently just sending out messages on this group until I finally got a response. And actually, the response I got was from Todd, who's sitting over there playing Battlestar Galactica now. He was the only person that replied, and he basically replied and said, oh, this group's dead. I'm oversimplifying.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we can do better than that. I'll just keep going. So I just thought, if I keep posting, eventually someone else is going to find the same group the same way I found it.
Yeah.
And see that there are active messages going out there. And one by one, that happened. And I got other people contacting me, and I just kept saying, we're having games at our house. Come around, bring your friends. Slowly it sort of built up, and it built up. It took best part of a year to sort of get any sort of a turnout, where we were to the point where we were playing more than one game at a time, you know, having two tables going or something. We were fortunate in that we managed to get ourselves into this house. It was quite cheap. It was quite close to a station. It was three floors. There's just the two of us, so we had a lot of space. So, you know, we could invite as many people as we wanted, sort of thing, and provide somewhere for them to game. And then it just...
And that is, like, for people that haven't been to Japan or lived in Japan, having space is such... That's such a premium.
Yeah,
it's such a luxury. Yeah.
The social space in your house. I mean, we're sitting in this little corner of it's quite a big room. Mm-hmm. But most people, this little corner would be all they would have. Mm-hmm. So to invite people around to socialize at home is really challenging when your home is a small Japanese apartment.
Right? Yep.
And maybe you're sharing it with some other people and so on. So that social space, generally when you socialize in Japan, you go out somewhere to a cafe or a bar or izakaya, something like that.
Right? I mean, there's some games I couldn't play on a table, like Space Hawk.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just have to play that on the floor. There was no space.
Yeah, there's or just Twilight no Imperium. Way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Twilight Imperium. You cannot set that up in the normal sort of space you have at home. But we had that kind of space. So, you know, we just kept inviting people. On our ground floor, we had like a kitchen dining area with a big dining table. And next to that was a reasonably sized room that had a big L-shaped sofa and coffee table, and you could put a few more chairs in there, sort of thing, so you could get a decent sized game in that room. The floor above that had three rooms. There was a really quite a small room, it was kind of a medium size, and then a large room.
Yep.
And then the top floor was basically our bedroom, but the whole floor was one room. And the bed and TV and stuff were kind of took up half the room, so the other side of the room had a table and chairs in it. So actually, the first time we ran a convention was at the house. We used all three floors. There was a role-playing game in my bedroom for an entire day.
All right. Wow. Some strict rules of what they could or couldn't do.
Yeah, well,
keep it, clean, keep it clean.
Well, the whole thing was like the game days that we had, I mean, that would be like a Saturday or a Sunday, and it would be a relatively small number of people. But this gets back to that thing about Silver Week. So Silver Week is a really rare thing in Japan, where there's another week, and it's in September.
September, yeah.
And every so many years, an extra public holiday gets slipped in there or something, and it becomes a little bit like Golden Week. And they call that one Silver Week. Well, 2009, so it's 2007 when the company went under, and Linda and I started sort of trying to build up some sort of a gaming group. And we were using those Jig notice boards, but that wasn't, I mean, Jig still wasn't really anything at that stage.
Yeah.
It was just a notice board that we were using to promote the fact that people were welcome to come and game. That notice board, so it had an administrator, and once I got things going, I wanted to be able to do more, like, because you could set up like automatic mail outs and things like that if you had administrator rights.
Right.
So I sort of delved into the depths of it, like, who's the administrator? And I found out it was a guy called Manny. And, you know, I could go into the email list. So I got his email, and I sent him an email, and he said, oh, well, I'm not in Japan anymore. I've moved back to the States. Well, you're the administrator for this group. Am I? Yes, you are. What's the password? Give me the administrator rights. He had no idea. He'd left the country a couple of years before. He'd completely forgotten about it.
Yeah.
So he emailed me back like a couple of weeks later. He said, actually, I've managed to remember what the password was. Here's all you need to do. And I, at that point, I took over the administration thing of that Yahoo group. Mm. And then I was able to do more with it. So that really helped me to be able to sort of grow the group into some sort of a club.
Yeah.
And then the Silver Week thing happened, where actually we've got this extra holiday. It's a 3-day weekend. Why don't we try and run something over 3 days? Linda, my wife, jumped on, so that's a great idea. Let's do it. So we just started saying, like, Silver Week, you guys have all got an extra long weekend that you didn't know you were going to have. Come around and game for 3 days at our house. So, and we set it up. We said we'll have gaming for the first 2 days and the third day on the morning. And in the afternoon, there's a park across from the house. We'll go over there, have a barbecue, and sort of wind up with a few beers and chew highs and so on, and wave goodbye. Great. And then the next thing, I started getting inquiries from out of town. People had started to notice the group was doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And it still didn't really have an identity as the Jig Club does now.
Yeah.
So then, I mean, I had a guy come up from Hiroshima, people from Nagoya, from Mie, and they all stayed in the house over that weekend. So we had, at one point, we had about 8 or 9 people sleeping on the floor in different levels of the house. And it was like, but that's when Linda and I kind of realised we've actually created something here, you know. So it was kind of cool. It was like, that's really good. But that Silver Week, that's all. And afterwards, the aftermath, and we're cleaning up the house and sort of thing. That was really good. That was really fun. We could do this again. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do it again, we'll have to do it at Golden Week. So that happened 6 months later, essentially, is the next one with the Golden Week rolls around, because that's May. And we just did it again. It's 3 days at our house, finished with the barbecue. You know, Linda and I catered the whole thing, and part of that was the whole thing of like how Costco had opened up here. So, and we lived in Moriguchi, and the Costco is a Magasaki. From our house, it was about 75 minutes by bicycle. You could go on the train, but then you'd have to like walk to the store or take the store shuttle
and then you're going to
carry everything on the train and so on. So we biked across Osaka to Amagasaki to go to Costco, filled up the baskets and backpacks and whatever with, you know, M&Ms and, well, you remember the trail mix that we used to make.
Yeah, my stomach remembers that. My waistline.
All this kind of stuff. Yeah. So we would spend like probably a month of weekends where we would cycle over to Costco and back home, and getting them to deliver stuff as well. So soft drinks, and we just catered everything. We catered the whole thing. Mm. I mean, it's not catered anymore, because that takes people with that sort of determination.
Yeah.
And with the skills and that. Because, yeah, we would put on meals, as you remember.
Yeah, yeah. Wraps and that.
So, I would spend days in the kitchen preparing all this food before everybody arrived. Mm. To fully cater the thing, because we wanted people to be able to walk in the door of our house, sit down and start gaming, and not have to get up and go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, it's kind of cool that we're now in this single space in a community centre and so on, but it does sort of take away that thing, because people have to get up and go off somewhere and find some food, and it kind of breaks up the games. And, you know, you finish a game and you're like, no, I'm going to go away for an hour and then come back. So that didn't happen, because people would just finish a game, they go and get something to eat, carry on. So that's the first two conventions were run entirely in the house. We finished off with a barbecue. I think the first one we ended up with about 35 people across the 3 days. The biggest day was about 25 people.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next one, which, you know, was only 6 months later, we had like 45 people across the 3 days, 35 on the biggest day. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of the sort of the stories that have become sort of Jig myth and it came out of that one. That was the first time it was actually Golden Week. Ted ran a game of Call of Cthulhu in my bedroom for an entire day. Now, he lives out in Biwako, and he had to be on the last train. Like, he was trying to wind up the game, and it was, he had to be out of the house by sort of 11:15 to get across town, to get on the JR, to get out to Biwako sort of thing. And he literally like just ran down the stairs with sort of papers trailing behind him, raced out the door, you know, having managed to wind up this game that had gone all day. You know?
Yeah. And you've gone mad. Everybody.
Yeah. 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 Right.
Or, you're insane.
I mean, the guys are sitting over there playing Battlestar Galactica with my wife, and that's kind of a real sort of retro thing. And I'm wearing the shirt, you know, the Not an Island Cylon shirt. And that the first time that became sort of a club thing was in that convention. And Rob sitting
that
game over there.
Come out like about that time.
Yeah, around that. So that was like, that was the first game that became sort of a fad within the club. Like, because that's the thing, you notice like a cane come, some game comes out, someone introduces it, and then the club kind of goes on a bit of a frenzy for that game for a while.
Yeah.
King of Tokyo did the same thing for a while. You know,
Twilight Imperium.
Imperium, where we arranged that every year to, you know, that's kind of the midsummer holiday game.
Yeah.
Where, you know, someone has to arrange for a room for us somewhere for the entire day to go and play that one game. Because you can't play those kind of big games.
Yeah.
And if you do commit to playing a game in a situation like this, where you want to, you kind of want to work the room.
Yeah.
You want to meet everybody. So, I mean, yeah, we ran it for in the house for a couple of years. The next time round was when we went, it's getting a bit much for the house, and you know, we need to find something. So that's the first time we had part of the convention was in a community centre, and it was one near our house. I think that's the first time you were there.
Yeah, I started at the community centre.
Yeah, the community, and it wasn't far from where we lived.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a local Indian restaurant that we were regular customers at that did a deal for people so they could go over to the curry house across the road. And, so that was our first attempt sort of getting some sort of sponsorship sort of tie-in or something. So we had these meal tickets. It didn't really work out as well as I'd hoped. Because unfortunately for him, Linda and I still catered the thing. So nobody was hungry. So there's this guy over there who's cooked up all this extra curry waiting for his customers.
And he was like, yeah, I'll just stay here, eat it.
Sorry, but you know, we ate at his place every week, so you know, we still had a good relationship. But yeah, getting back to kind of what the club was about, like once I realised that that's what was happening, that we actually had a club, and that Linda and I were kind of the core of it, we had to kind of think about, well, what are we trying to achieve? I was very much a thing of like, I've got some real strong biases. Like, don't let me anywhere near Warhammer.
Okay.
Because I'll smash it. kind of thing. No, I exaggerate. But
I remember
the
Warhammer or the Games Workshop people being in a separate room. I don't know if that was your doing.
Well, actually, the first time that there was any Warhammer was Miguel, who you've met. Miguel's Spanish.
Yeah.
And this other guy, Robert, he speaks Spanish. And he came in from Nagoya, Miguel came up from Kobe, and this was still at the house. And these two guys turned up, and they were the only Warhammer guys.
Yeah.
And in the house, there was one really good big dining table.
Yeah.
And these two guys took that table for the entire day. Because where else were they going to set up Warhammer?
Yeah.
And it was just kind of, I have a bit of a regret about giving up the best table in the house to two guys for an entire day. And they spent the entire day trash talking each other in Spanish. But at the same time, just because I don't like Warhammer or, you know, Magic the Gathering or something, I didn't want to say, well, you're not welcome.
Yeah.
So it was actually, I deliberately said, you can have the best table.
Yeah.
Because that's the only one that's going to work for you guys. And right beside them on the floor were guys playing Memoir 44, because where else were they going to fit? So they just played it on my kitchen floor. Everybody had to step over them to get to the food, but it worked. And that became really a big sort of philosophy. Was like, doesn't matter what game I like, what do you like? And I will make it possible. I will find someone else, I will put it into the threads, I will track people down, I'll invite them, I'll get them here and get your game played. So that was the thing with Idle Red Hands, with the role playing. Mm-hmm. And then, so, you know, getting Wayne to run a game, that was at the third convention. It was like, I was determined to get role playing game. It had,
Hollowed Earth Exhibition.
Yeah. So you guys were kind of a feature on that day, your table. And that actually really kicked other people into doing more stuff. Mm. And when we first used this centre, like Keith ran a fourth edition D&D kind of slugfest. And the whole thing was he was just going to keep bringing out bigger and bigger monsters until everybody died. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. But it was a good way to sort of introduce the mechanics of the, because the fourth edition had just come down,
yeah,
come out at that stage and so on. But the, you know, there was Hollow Earth was running in that same, on that same day, I think.
Yeah, no, it was really good. And we had people who had never played a role-playing game before would sit down and kind of won me over, or you know, moved me from not liking the X's and O dice of the Hollow Earth exhibition, thinking it was unnecessary, to understanding why it was so easy, like seeing these people. And in Japan, when we say people haven't played a role-playing game, they don't know what a role-playing game is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even like a passive knowledge of Dungeons and Dragons, and then just like looking at the dice, and even like board games or dice games are really, really rare in Japan. And that's surprising. And just like, okay, if it's X, that's good. O, it's bad. Or the other way around. It's been a while since I played Hex. But then, yeah, you can just see, oh, okay, that's really easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne had made up like little sheets with a, you know, prominent, you know, picture of the character, and it was just really easy.
Even some of the board gamers that were here who hadn't role played. Mm. And that, and like he set it up really well. Like the character sheets were actually little like passports.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So there were all these really nice touches. So you're playing this character. Here's your passport. But inside that, all the necessary sort of, you know, character stats, character traits, and all that sort of thing. But presenting it in this kind of sepia toned passport form, and the fact that, like, you know, the start off was that we had crashed a plane, landed in this mysterious island sort of thing, so like, of course we've got our passports on us, that really helped set the scene. And it was really good that we were able to introduce more people to that sort of game. You see, role playing was my background, and I started off, I mean, I was running a Middle Earth campaign with some co-workers kind of thing, and then that was the whole thing with the company going under, and it was like, that's it, I've lost that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so, I mean, you know, because role-playing's your thing as well, and how hard it is to keep a role-playing going, you know, with people have, you know, like our Nova work schedule, we work till 9 in the evening, and on Sundays we work till 7. But the other thing was that everybody had a different weekend. So, like, my weekend was Wednesday, Thursday. And my wife was lucky enough to have the same days off. But our friends would maybe have Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
Or Friday, Saturday. So you never had the same day off. The only thing that was guaranteed was that Sunday evening, everybody finished by 7. So that meant that after work on a Sunday, we'd go back to our place and we'd role play on a Sunday evening.
Yeah.
And even like one guy left and went to China, he would Skype in from China. So we kept the game going for a little while. But eventually, it was just impossible to maintain it. And that, but with the board gaming, where you can come in and just pick up and play the game and leave, and that's it. And there's no carryover, there's no need to continue. Well, you don't have to spend a lot of effort designing a one-shot, one-day, one-session role-playing game or something like that. It's really hard to maintain those things. But actually, the result of the club really sort of growing, and like by the fourth convention, it was well beyond Linda and I and our extended group of friends. It was genuinely a club, and it was genuinely a mixture of like foreigners and Japanese men and women, that we could say, right, here's a games day, and stuff would happen, and some of it would be role playing, some of it would be living card games or other trading card games, or some of it would be board games or whatever. It would just, miniatures would turn up and that. So yeah, that's kind of, for me, that was a real thing to like make sure that everybody was getting whatever itch they had scratched. You know? It's a big deal to have the club grow to that sort of size.
And right.
The last convention that Linda and I were here for was the fifth. And we, across the 3 days, got 130 people through the door.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it's been quite quiet today and yesterday, but it's early in the day. But I don't think the numbers are up there anymore like they were.
A lot of people started having kids.
Yeah.
That came up,
And that's the thing, because you look around, a lot of the room are lifers, as I call them. I mean, we managed to get to escape velocity and head off to our home country. So we're from New Zealand. We've been back there for 5 years. And planning this trip since the day we left.
But another thing, I think, what happened was, like, Jig was kind of like conventions, and it was like that small nucleus of people, But now, like, we were talking to Jules and that, and that there's, him and Rob have started, like, RPG one-shot days, and that comes from Jig. Of course, Josh is always a big champion of the living card games and starting, like, nights. So then it was less reliant on we needed this one day a month or this one convention a year, and now it's, like...
that kind of seeding off those other things.
Yeah.
That was starting to happen before Linda and I left. For the last sort of 18 months before we left, those subgroups were peeling off, like, through the club. They'd found the people with the same habit, and they're like, okay, well, we want to get more of that, so we'll arrange. But also, we were starting to find other groups existed already. So, you know, the guys who run the half gaming cafe in town, and that they had their own Facebook group. The Osaka Board Gamers Group or something it was called, and like we eventually it was going to happen, we crossed paths with them, and like, but they were very much a small group. It was sort of 8 or 10 friends and that, and then they're like, oh wow, there are other gamers out there. So and getting, and then again, like, I discovered the Idle Red Hands podcast, and like, wow, okay, wow, you guys are here and role playing's your thing, please come along. And that was, so that was in the third convention, and getting Wayne to run a game and so on. It was all about, once we had some sort of a presence, and then you start doing a little bit more sort of googling and searching on the internet and going, oh look, there are other groups. And I know when I started talking to Rob, and Rob's the only person that knew that Linda and I were going to come back for the 10th convention, he started talking about meetup, and I was like, oh, meetup, what's going on? But there's actually kind of this thing of like, so I started off with the Yahoo group, and then we actually had a big debate in the club about, oh, is Yahoo groups where we should be? Should we be on Facebook or Board Game Geek sort of thing? And I always took the attitude was, the more platforms we were on, the better. The bigger the footprint you've got, the more chance someone's going to find you. So we've got an extensive club forum and so on Board Game Geek. And we've got the Facebook group that's showing over 600 members now. You know, it was 140 when I left. So, you know, now, admittedly, that doesn't mean there are 600 club members in Japan, because, you know, people come and go, but they stay members of the club. But that's fantastic. But, you know, apparently most of the chatter and arrangement stuff now is done on Meetup. So we've got the sort of evolution of social media and so on that's used to manage the club. And if Meetup's the way it's done now, that's fine. But apparently, having taken Jig onto Meetup, I was told that they've found, like, there's two or three other really quite large groups that organise through Meetup for this area. So there should be some more cross-pollination going on. But also that thing of like, well, you spawn off these subgroups. I know, like, there's those murder mystery dinner night things.
Yes.
That's kind of turning into, like, people have tried one or two of those and they want to do more of them. So there's a subgroup sort of forming around that concept of having those murder mystery dinner parties. And Rob's trying to organise a giant one where he needs, like, 50 people. It's an alien invasion thing. You have all these teams that represent different countries. He mentioned it this morning. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I saw it on Facebook. It's unreal that, like, you can, you know, through, like, Jig, you're able to arrange, like, a 50 player game.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, even, like,
but that blows my mind, because, you know, I started out with, you know, half a dozen people coming around to my house.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and I... Once I realised that we were building a club, and then once I realised also that we were leaving the country, I got this kind of, I kind of hate to use the word, but there was kind of this legacy thing.
Yeah.
Like, I've built something. And for me to actually come back 5 years later and walk into a room and it's full of people sitting around tables playing board games and card games and that, and know that that's something I kind of kicked off.
Yeah. You know? I mean, there's t-shirts.
Yeah, there's even t-shirts, yeah. No, well, t-shirt, that's the thing. Order. Well, actually, I mean, I will reveal this one now. So this is actually the original Jig t-shirt, and this goes back to another thing. So when we first came to this community center, that's the also the same year that the Kansai game market started.
Yes.
And that happens a couple of, was it, it's February, isn't it? So it's 2 months before the convention.
Okay.
around about that time was when we started discussing having some sort of a club identity. We even discussed things about, like, should we have a club committee and, you know, have a chairman and all that sort of thing. And actually, I deliberately pushed us away from that, my own self, saying, no, let's just be a loose thing where we organise ourselves through forums and discussion and, you know, mutual consent, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was deliberately...
So we don't have to call Todd president?
No, no, but that's the thing. I mean, there's always ends up having to be someone who is the person that pushes you over the lip.
Sure, yeah, no.
You know, so you start rolling downhill kind of thing. And it's been great. Like, when Linda and I left, Keith and Gabby took that over. But they only stayed for another year.
Yep.
And then Todd, Jules, Rob and that have all stepped into that role, and that Josh as well. And now, I mean, I see everything's got Sigmund's name on it.
You know? Yep, Sigmund, yeah.
And I mean, he wasn't a member of the club when I left. I didn't know who he was, but every time I check on the Facebook, Sigmund's. Okay, good. Someone has stepped into that role.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't say that anybody actually runs the club, that they're the boss of the club or that they're telling people what to do. The club just is a thing that has its own momentum.
I mean, the cash collection is just a pouch sitting by a whiteboard.
It's the
honor system.
It's a total honor system. Yeah. That we used to collect the money because what we tried to do when we started it out, because, you know, with the catering and so on, that was costing us money. Mm. So we used to collect money, but our target was to break even.
Yeah.
So we'd even get to the point where we'd sort of tot up how much we had and go, yeah, we've pretty much broken even, and stop collecting money. So, you know, some people would walk in the door and be like, no, it's all right, don't worry. We've got our money back. That's all we wanted. So it's always very much about just being providing the space, providing the opportunity, providing the circle, the connections, the networks to let people enjoy the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever that game is. So, it's been great because part of this thing is, you know, I can point to people around the room and go, well, that person stepped in at some stage.
Yeah.
That's the thing about the hobby. It really, because it's a social activity, they tend to be social people. So they tend to be the people that are happy to take over and organise and, you know, I'll take on that mantle for this moment and so on. It's a great thing that we've created. And I don't mean Linda and myself, I just mean all the membership together.
You mentioned the game market. Like, what is that? And the reason is because it's become an important thing for JIG. I mean, a lot of people volunteer their time to man the JIG booth at the Kansai Game Market.
So the Kansai JIG is a subgroup of a much bigger organization. The other area that's really active is Tokyo.
Yeah.
And at the time that I found it, I would go and have a look at the Kansai notice boards, but also the Tokyo ones. The Tokyo ones were far more active, but still also they were struggling a little bit. And then actually I started commenting on stuff that they were doing and talking about what we were doing here. And then there was this thing like, they have a much bigger catchment of people and so on, but you can look back sort of 8-9 years ago or even a little bit further back than that, and you'll see a whole lot of commentary in their forums about, hey, Kansai is doing better than us, what are we doing wrong? You know, Osaka's like, they've got a convention every year, what are we doing?
Yeah.
So they kind of spurred themselves on and they've come on from there as well. And then it got to this thing of, now we've got some sort of an identity, and there was this discussion about getting a logo. And then I saw on the Tokyo boards, they were talking about going to the Tokyo Game Market.
Right.
And then someone else said, oh, there's an Osaka one as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that year, it was the first one.
Okay.
Well, what is this game market thing? Well, it's, you know, it's like a trading thing. The game companies and game designers and that will be there, hawking their wares and so on. So, that's, to me, I was like, wow, the real problem we have in the club is we don't have enough Japanese membership. We should go to the game market. Not as customers, we should have a booth. So I put the word out on the notice board. I said, look, let's go to the game market, find out what we need. You know, someone found out what it costs to get a booth, and we were, okay, we'll do it. We got a booth. And then we're like, at the very last minute, we're like, hang on, we don't really have an identity. Like, we've got no banner, we've got nothing. And in my local train station in Moriguchi, it was a T-shirt printer. And I just knocked something up on the computer, went down to the station, said, make me 10 of these.
Okay.
So this is the very original,
the
first Kansai jig t-shirt. I got a bit, the horrible color of this. I said, look, I need 10 and I need like Western sizes. He said, well, the only color you can have is horrible. So I was like, horrible.
I was wondering why it's not the traditional black. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was, so a batch of t-shirts were made up just for the people who were going to man the booth.
Yeah.
So this, so we went off, we went to the first game market, and it wasn't actually that big because it was the first time to run it. It was the same people that were running the Tokyo one, but they decided they'd expand down here. There weren't a lot of booths and that time, but we were the only club there, and it was a bunch of Westerners in that. But we were handing out flyers. We'd just made up a, so again, it was me on the computer. Yeah. Just quickly make something up. That'll do. Find someone that could translate into Japanese. Slap a couple of photos of dice on there. Hand these flyers out. And you had like a booth at a table with a few chairs in front of the booth. So we thought, right, we'll take a few games down and we'll play demonstration games. But it worked. At the convention that year, 2 months later, we had about 10 or 12 Japanese players come along that had all been to the game market or heard about us through the game market.
Okay.
And that was a real boost. It was like, wow, this is great. Because this was the thing that was kind of lacking. A lot of the foreign players here would like to get into Japanese games, but you can't get into them if you don't have access, and that access usually means a native to drag you into it. But at the same time, you've got all these Japanese guys who've got all these Western games, but they've got no one wants to play them in their Japanese soil. And so it just and it happened to be that was the first year that we came to this centre. So it tied in really well in that we were in a public space, big space, and just through the door in twos and threes came these Japanese people. Wow, great. And we just made them as welcome as we could. And I mean, Kohei's still sitting over there. So he was one of the guys, the first game market on that. You know, and it's just been a, that key word of me being inclusive. You know, just include everybody. So and it worked. And then the sort of the debate raged online, and we came up with the jig logo. I might go and grab my other shirt in a minute, and that, and there was a big thing between, because Kansai and Tokyo worked together to decide what the logo was going to be, and we actually had a design competition. There were lots and lots and lots of designs entered by in membership, and that, and both branches had to decide and agree on the same design, and then the only difference is the, you know, one says Kansai, one says Tokyo or whatever, and so both clubs are branded the same way. Then all the other sub branches, because remember originally that Yahoo group thing, I said there were groups created for all these other areas. Well, you know, we've had players come in from Nagoya, and then so the Nagoya group took off, so other groups, and I know that there's talk of possibly Okayama is going to start up a group now. The Yahoo thing's kind of died. I actually still get the occasional email from the group system saying we're still here, we still exist, but nobody uses it anymore. Those branches, those sub-branches, that. It's still driven mainly by, I mean, it's, we're the two biggest population centres, so it's not a surprise. But yeah, those other groups are there. Mie's been going for ages, but they just, they're a relatively small area, and they would, they'll come here for the convention sort of thing. They run their own things. They did try to build up a big thing. I remember we went over there and they tried to run a 3-day thing, and very much it was run out of someone's house, exactly on the model of what we'd done. They'd been to our house, so they tried to do the same thing, but it just didn't quite snowball enough, partly because there are only so many long weekends in the year that you can fit these things in, and people have to go and visit families, and those other groups are there, and they flare up. I guess that's with enthusiasm every now and again. I mean, I've been out of it for 5 years, so I don't know how well they're doing now, but certainly that was the case. And it was, it was just such a good thing to be part of that sort of process of starting something. And, you know, I've walked away from it and I've come back and it's still going.
Yeah.
5 years later, you know, wow. It's just a general thing I tell friends about Japan, having lived here for 11 years,
yeah.
You know, you go back home and people are always asking, you know.
Yeah.
One of my kind of catchphrases is it's high-tech 1950s.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's something, now there's a dedicated board game bar cafe. Yeah.
Well, it's not the only one, of course, because the second year of the game market,
yeah,
there was a guy called Nathan who'd come along to a few game days, and then he said, I'm opening a gaming cafe in Kyoto. Mm. It's called Cafe Meeple. And he said, I'll pay for half the booth if I can use it to promote my cafe. And by that time, we had the full club logo sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, that's great. And, you know, we'll get a full booth, which gives us two gaming tables. And we've got this business kind of associated. So the first cafe that kind of came through the club and whatever was this by Nathan, opened in Kyoto. So it's up on the north side, Cafe Meeple. Check it out. And then, yeah, like Graham and that have opened the bar, which is, you know, only, what, 10, 15 minutes walk from here, right in central Osaka. Check it out. That's kind of this thing, like, you know, people have actually managed to create gaming businesses and that in this country or in this region, you know, and we've got that relationship, you know, the new club flyer that's been printed, which is double-sided with promoting the hub.
So. Which is funny because you talked about how you dashed off the first flyer for the game market, and just watching it on Facebook, the months it took for them to decide on the colors for this new
but
flyer.
But the whole thing about there's nobody in charge.
Yeah.
Right, so it has to be consensus.
Yep.
You know? And it went through all those, because even myself in New Zealand, I watched that debate and then I started chipping in. And I'm like, I'm not really... People seem to be putting a little bit of weight by what I was saying, and I'm like, yeah, I know I kind of kick things off, but I've been out of the country for 5 years. You guys do not need to listen to me, you know. But it was great to see that whole sort of process. And that was the same thing when we came up with the Jig logo. It went through, you know, like, how are we going to decide this? Oh, let's just, you know, put some dice on a shirt, you know.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, let's have a design competition. Oh, okay, great idea. I don't even know where the idea came from. And then it was just like, we just ran this thing. People submitted designs. It went through levels of voting. Various designs got knocked out sort of thing until we got down to and then there was the whole thing of like, well, here's the design, but what are the color combinations and that, and a big sort of, I mean, the right people were chipping in at the right time with the right kind of information. Well, we had, I mean, I mentioned before it was Keith and Gabby and Linda and myself, but there was also Luke and Anna who were running Nagoya, but would travel down even for a normal club day down here.
Yeah.
And Lincoln and Monty, who I think are still running the Nagoya one now. They took, because Luke and Anna went home when they had babies. And, I'm still in contact with them all the time. They're in the UK. We did have like a core management group, I suppose, that was 50% women. Because we were lucky enough to all have partners who were gamers. So often the guys would come up with the ideas, but it's the women who get things done. And it's really true. I would be completely lost without Linda to manage things. I just give ideas and then she figures out how to do them. Or tells me it's impossible. And then I cry.
And you try again. Well, what would you say to somebody who is looking to start? Because there's other countries like China or other foreign things. You know, somebody's like in a new country or just a new place and they wanted.
I was totally inspired by Wayne's World 2. Book it and they will come. That was the mentor in my head.
I was like,
book it and they will come.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's the line from the movie.
So, okay.
But it was that mentality. Yeah. I got on that Yahoo group and I just kept saying, there is a games day. There is a games day. There is a games day. Someone will turn up. And like, you know, Keith and Gabby, that was their first date.
Oh, wow.
And then we just became the best of friends from then on.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And, you know, that was the thing about them sort of taking over running the club when we left and, you know, passing the baton on. And it was just easy to go, right, well, they've worked side by side with us with all the organising and whatever, pushing things through. And Julian Griffin, who was the guy that started running the Games Days, the French guy, if you remember. He would run Games Days in Kyoto, right up in the north side of Kyoto. So, I mean, he would come along to our days, but it was easier for him to organise something up there. So then we started alternating, like we'd have a Games Day here, and then 2 weeks later we'd go up to Kyoto. And that, well, he's at works as a translator, and he's gone back to France. On his Facebook, just a month or so ago, popped up a thing. He received an award for a game design of his, and that it's some thing. I didn't understand everything because it's in French, but there's this video of him walking up on stage looking dazed, receiving some sort of an award, and hooray for him, you know. Actually, that's something we haven't mentioned. Actually, there's quite a few guys in the club who have sort of ventured down that game design road. Well, Julian was definitely one. Like he was constantly turning up with games for us to games test and try out. There's another guy, Patrick, who was working him. Well, he came up with a card game. But yeah, a lot of other guys have toyed with game design. With that game,
yeah, Wayne went on.
Because that had real...
Like, yeah. After the Hex game and the stuff that he prepped for that Hex game at the convention, which is, like, a rare opportunity in Japan, then he went on to, like, trying to do more design, like, how to, like, you know, making original stuff for games, and now, yeah, he's going to have some stuff coming up.
Well, I was doing a little bit of data mining, I suppose you'd call it, before we got here, just to see who was still actually involved in the club and where people were. So Wayne was one of the people, like, well, okay, what's he up to, kind of thing. And I see, like, he's been actually, like, designing stuff and, you know, self-publishing and all that kind of thing. So that was kind of cool. Taking all that time you guys spent sitting around a microphone discussing all that stuff.
And actually putting it to good use.
You know. Oh, look, I've had many fantastic hours sitting listening to the Idle Red Hen podcast. And every time I kind of like, I haven't gamed for a while, I bust one out. Even one I've listened to before.
That's good.
Yeah, well, whether everybody here knows it or not, they should be very grateful to Ryan and his wife Linda for creating this situation. So the Kansai Jig is a great opportunity for people living in Western Japan to meet and game. So thank you so much.
Or just in Japan in general, look up your local jig.
Right.
As you can see, jig.
Yes. And we'll put links to the Facebook group and everything. Be sure to check that out. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks. It was really great that you guys could come down here and do this. You know, it's something to have, you know, 10 years of convention, 12 years for the club, you know, and it's still going strong. Thank you very much.
I mean there's monthly games and not just board games but also
but all
RPGs,
the splinter groups and there's so much going on there.
You made something that still standing.
Yes. Yeah. Legacy.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Thanks so much. All right. Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.